I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's in their minds. Sitting in the chairs for Shape Up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, media executive Nick Charles, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, and syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete. I may jump in here or there, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Yo, 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 fellas, what's up? Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, pretty
doing good,
Jimmy.
Man. How's it going?
Man, well, check this out. You know what? Senator John McCain, his latest attack ad compares Senator Barack Obama to Britney Spears and Paris Hilton. Wait a second. Oh, snap. Michelle, I know there's some tape.
Do you want to hear it? You guys want to hear
I'd
it?
I'd like that.
Drop
okay,
it.
Okay, here it is. Although it doesn't show you. The pictures are kind of awesome, but here it
right,
is. Here's
right.
the audio.
Drop it.
He's the biggest celebrity in the world. But is he ready to lead? With gas prices soaring, Barack Obama says no to offshore drilling and says he'll raise taxes on electricity. Higher taxes, more foreign oil. That's the real Obama.
I'm John McCain, and I approve this message.
Wow.
Well, there you have it.
And what you Thanks,
don't,
Michelle.
Yeah, and what you don't see are like the thousands of people. Like when he was in Germany, like
Brilliant.
Something like hundreds of thousands of people
mm-hmm.
came out to see him.
Right.
And you've got these pictures of these huge, you know, crowds waving at him and so forth, chanting
yeah,
Obama, Obama. So there you go.
On an interesting tip, A-Train, we know that you're the in-shop Obama supporter. You know what? I got to give it to McCain because you know what? He's making a legitimate criticism of Obama fever by likening it to the pop culture cult of personality. You know what? I'm going to co-sign that.
And I am not going to co-sign that. I think
All
that,
right.
you know, with Barack's recent trip, his recent world tour, I think McCain is trying to, again, latch onto the fact that Barack is some sort of cult of celebrity. And unfortunately, we as Americans are attracted to the cult of celebrity. And I think that, you know, he's just trying to triage all the positive publicity that Barack's gotten. And we'll find out, you know, whether or not this Obama-palooza has any traction to it or not.
But wait a minute. Isn't it more of a criticism of the people supporting him? I mean, how is it a poor reflection on him that you got hundreds of thousands of people who want to come out? I mean, I just think this is kind of tricky.
I think Michelle's into something here. It's really a criticism of how we have confused electing a president with the process of selecting the next American Idol. I don't think the ad works because I think it needs to be much more precise. McCain needs to be much more precise in explaining to us what it is about Obama that we should find troubling. And the idea that somehow he's a celebrity, Michelle's right, doesn't make Obama look bad. It makes us look bad.
Yeah, it's like saying you're
for
stupid.
Elevating him
it's like saying
to
you
celebrity
all are stupid.
Status. Yeah, and that
right.
we're so eager to have these kinds of heroes that we've mixed together, you know, cult celebrities with political celebrities and whatever. But I think that at the end of the day, we like celebrities. So the idea somehow that you would call Obama the biggest celebrity in the world, how is that exactly a slam on your opponent? If anything, that makes your opponent sound good.
You know what? I think everybody here has it wrong. Nick, come on, man. I know you got my back, bro.
I think the man is just doing what everybody says, that, you know, you have a thin resume. So he goes out there to pad the resume. And he's working against a guy, you know, who runs an ad that basically praises him. Because the fact that John McCain couldn't
right.
get 10 people to show up, that's on him.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
even if people who show up to see Obama, these folks can't vote for him, they're abroad. And they just want to see what he looks like. It's a phenomenon. And that's okay to be a phenomenon. Now you have to be a phenomenon with heft.
Obama's got to step up to the plate and say there is steak with the sizzle. It's not just
exactly.
sizzle. There's steak here, too.
Exactly.
It's a lot of sizzle there, bro. A lot
Where's
of sizzle.
Where's the
but...
beef? Where's the beef? I
love
that commercial.
Speaking
Where's
of sizzle.
Beef? Y'all are a bunch of haters.
Oh, seriously, yeah. that is the love. Hateration. That is
love.
Hateration.
Y'all are a bunch
All right.
of haters.
Well, speaking of hateration, Obama's got a little bit for rapper actor Chris Bridges, also known as Ludacris, who lent himself to a rhyme, a little freestyle, you know, to kind of give Obama the ups. But you know what Obama said? No, thank you. I think we got some tape.
Yeah,
Michelle.
You want to hear it? A little bit. Can't play the whole thing because, you know, I'm trying to keep my license. But,
right.
But here you go. Here's a little bit.
Drop it.
We about to make a history. The first black president is destined and it's meant to be. The threats ain't phasing us. The nooses or the jokes. Get off. Black people, it's time to get out and vote. Paint the White House black, and I'm sure that's got them terrified. McCain don't belong in any chair unless he's paralyzed.
Now that was
Oh, snap.
That was mean.
That was the funky beat. That
Ouch.
Was the funky Young Buck beat, which I believe was orchestrated by David Banner. Now, Chris Bridges is a 3-time Grammy winner, also philanthropist, an up-and-coming actor. He was born in Illinois, just for those of you who do not know.
What are you, Obama Wikipedia? Is actually on record. What's up with you?
Obama is actually on record as a Ludacris fan, saying that he keeps him in regular rotation in his iPod, but not so much anymore. I'm thinking he's turning his back on Luda. Yo, Nick, what's up?
I'm so disappointed with Obama at this one, because my thing is, it wasn't Obama a couple of weeks or a couple of months ago who said, I can't defend every time someone puts my name in their mouth for whatever reason. And the people who listen to Luda, you know, they notice it's just par for the course among rappers and people like himself. And the thing about Chris Bridges, he is more than just some kind of, you know, second-rate rapper. He's also a very good actor and a very good artist who reaches out to the community. So Obama's like, oh, Luda's in my rotation. He's on my iPod. And then Luda comes out with saying things in this rap. And I think the thing against John McCain was a little off-color and, you know, a little off-putting. But the other stuff he said about Clinton and others.
He also called Hillary the B-word.
He actually said, as I mentioned,
I'm trying to keep my license.
He said irrelevant and a B-word.
That makes it a little hard to do the fundraising, brother. It makes it a little hard to make nice with the Clintons.
I'm about to tell you how it is.
Is
Obama really needs Ludacris? Because Ludacris has some of that cachet. He has that legitimacy. And Ludacris co-signing him for that crowd that listens to Ludacris, who are of voting age. I'm thinking, you know what? That wasn't a good move on Obama's part. To hit him back. Yo, A-Train,
now,
that's your boy.
You know, Chris Rock once said that, I love rap music, but I'm tired of defending it. It's hard to defend I Got Hoes in Different Area Codes on an intellectual level, which is also a ludicrous song. Hold on a second. Two things about the track that we just heard. Number one, it wasn't a freestyle. It was written. Number two, it was a dope track, except for when he called Clinton an irrelevant B, because he didn't need to do that. He is literally feeding the Bill O'Reillys of the world. They are automatically going to associate Luda and Obama now. And Barack, like Reverend Wright, like Father Flager, is going to have to answer for it.
Well, can I ask this? But Nick's point was he shouldn't have answered. Ruben?
This is the latest chapter in Barack Obama's never-ending saga of black and white, which one am I?
Right.
And this chapter is about a bunch of black rappers who, bless their heart, have decided to awaken politically by attaching themselves to Obama and trying to help him. But Obama has the right to say, hey, you know what? Step back. Well, you're not really helping me with this. You think you're helping me? Just don't do this. And so I think it's who needs who more in this scenario?
Let me ask this, though. Ruben was saying it's a black thing. Is it about race or is it about age? Because younger people like different music than older people do. Right. And all I'm saying is, like, the Rolling Stones have some lyrics that But because they're older now, they're in their 50s and 60s, it's faded into, isn't that cute? It's elevator music. But back in the day, it was edgy. And if you have a candidate who's that edge, you're talking about brown sugar. I mean, excuse me, what's that about?
So I guess
what I'm saying is when you are of the times, your music is always going to be considered a little off color. And I'm telling you, in 20 years, you know, Luda is going to be in the elevator. And we're going to go, oh, isn't he cute? And
I need to point this out. I mean, first of all, it's not Ludacris's job to be anybody but Ludacris. I mean, he's not, it's not like he's Jesse Jackson and he's like faking the funk on so many different levels. He's just Ludacris, you know. And at the end of the day, Obama needs to stop trying to be his brother's keeper and just run Obama. I think what's going to happen is Obama's going to run himself ragged trying to answer for why this brother does this or why this sister said this or that or the other. Obama needs to do like he did early on and brush it off his shoulders and keep it moving. And I'm that dude, and I approve that message. Moving on.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Jimmy Israel, Nick Charles, Ruben Navarrete, and Arsalan Iftikhar. They're in the barbershop. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. You know what? The House has put forth a resolution to apologize for slavery. Oh, hallelujah. Praise the Lord.
We're I feel
free
better already.
Last. You
I
know
feel
what?
Better.
I don't know. Ruben, help me out here, man. What good does an apology even do at this late date?
I don't know. I mean, you know, a lot of folks are making fun of and light of this notion of an apology for slavery. But if you couple it with the rest of it that came after slavery, with all the Jim Crow, with all the various efforts that government took to segregate and disenfranchise a whole segment of the population based solely on skin color, then I think I begin to get into it a little more. I don't like the idea of going back 150 years to apologize for something that nobody today can relate to. I'm sensitive to your rap, which is basically, you know, this is a symbolic gesture. How does this help me?
You know what? Congressman Steve Cohen, who's running for office in Memphis, Tennessee, he's only 10 days outside of a heated election. He needs some black votes. A-Train, get it.
Let's not forget also, During World War II, the internment of 120,000 Japanese Americans led to the Civil Liberties Act of 1988, signed by President Ronald Reagan 42 years ago. After the internment, apologizing for the internment and providing $1.25 billion in reparations of $20,000 to most internees, evacuees, and others of Japanese ancestry. And so our government has apologized and, more importantly, has paid reparations in the past. You know, right. People always laugh about the whole reparations debate, but this was $1.25 billion of reparations right. paid to 120,000 Japanese Americans right. for something that happened 42 years ago. And so,
and what I want to know is, where's the line? How did I miss out? Is there like a place to go fill out a form? I mean,
right.
Oh,
you know,
come on now.
The Southwest used to be under different ownership.
You know, right. I think Aslan hit on the head. You know, forget the apology. Send me a check. Right. This is a week where we had two other apologies, where the military apologized to some black soldiers up in Cephas for something that happened back in 1944. And then, of course,
Amen.
It was the apology by the AMA to the NMA, which is the American Medical Association, to the National Medical Association, which is the black version of the AMA, for all the years when they wouldn't let these brothers and sisters to work in the best facilities and to treat people. So, you know, as far as apologies go, the slavery one was third.
We've covered both those stories. By the way, we had Steve Cohen on the mm-hmm. program. And he can answer these questions of whether he's just doing it for politics. He says he's not. And secondly,
strange
on the
timing.
NMA thing, well, he's been trying to do it since the Clinton administration.
Yeah, he's
been trying
man.
To get this done since the Clinton administration. He's tried to get Clinton to pass.
What party is Cohen in?
He's a Republican. He's a Democrat.
Democrat.
Yeah.
All right, listen,
said,
Cohen. Here's that. Listen up. If Cohen's out there listening, here's what you need to do. As a Democrat, if you want to help black folks, listen carefully. The number one challenge that black folks are dealing with right now is a public school system that is not attentive to their needs. Their dropouts are too high. There's still remnants of racism within there. And guess who is lording over that public school system? Yep, that's right. Public school teachers and teachers unions who support who? Wait for it. The Democratic Party.
Oh, come on.
Well,
so if Cohen wants to really help black folks, let him bite the hand that feeds him and do something meaningful.
Okay. We hear you on that.
I hope Cohen hears it.
The argument is that we'll send them the tape. These apologies, the argument is that it expresses the moral position of our time, and
right.
that's never wrong to do. So I just wanted to ask Nick, where are you on that?
I'm where I was when I first said, you know, save the apology. I think it's symbolic. You know, I don't think it means much. And when I said send a check, I wasn't being facetious that everybody should just get a check. But as Aslan pointed out, we have specifically sat down and scientifically and mathematically been able to give reparations and help folks for what we did to them back in 1941 to 45. I still don't see the remedies going forward
right.
for slavery and or Jim Crow, et cetera.
I guess I think that to me, reparations is another issue. This is the sort of the narrow question of whether
sure.
it makes sense to express the moral sensibility of the time. I mean, you know, there are lots of times when we say we're sorry to someone,
absolutely.
Even if there's nothing we can do.
That's,
if you experience a loss.
No, it's not.
If you experienced a loss and I said to you, I am so sorry this happened to you, would that be wrong?
No, empathy is fine,
but
to punch somebody in the eye, and then say, "Oops, I'm sorry, I punched you in the eye. My big."
No, Jimmy. Jimmy, your analogy is slightly flawed. What it is my great granddaddy punched your great granddaddy in the eye,
right,
and I'm
right.
apologizing on behalf of my great granddaddy
because he did not have the
compassion to apologize, and so I'm apologizing for him.
No, that dog don't hunt, bro. You know, but you know,
I'm not sending you a Christmas card because you obviously don't care about gestures, and I'm saving mine for somebody who does. So.
I would be satisfied if the government would just pay off my student loans. Hello? All right.
Well, they obviously didn't get their money's worth.
Oh, snap.
Gentlemen, this is what I have to put up with every day, day in, day out. In my sleep, I'm hearing Michelle crack the whip. Let's keep it in motion, fellas. You know what? Rumors about the Green Bay Packers offering Brett Favre money to stay in retirement abound. What's up with that, Nick? I mean, kind of thumbnail what's going on with Brett Favre for those of us that don't know.
Well, you know, the last time we saw Brett Favre in uniform, he was losing to the New York Giants back in
ouch, ouch.
And then after that, 2 months later,
ouch.
You know, he's retiring and a lot of tears, crocodile tears. People are like, oh my God, he's so heartfelt. He really loves the game, but it's time for him to go. So he bows
right.
out, but he really doesn't bow out. And so he has this whole game going for the last 4 or 5 months of will he or won't he unretire? And finally, he's like, okay, you know, I'm coming back. And so the Green Bay Packers, who have moved on, they're like, well, you know, we didn't plan for this. So we'll rather give you $20 million to go and sit at home. And now Brett Favre is like saying, well, I don't know, I may just show up at training camp.
Wait. Are you serious? $20
million
$20 million
down.
To sit down.
Michelle, if you send me $200, I'll stay home.
No. You know what's interesting?
You send me $200, Michelle,
I'll
stay home.
There's also talk. Thanks for that, Nick. There's also talk that, you know, Packers could flip the game, take him into the fold, mm-hmm. and either trade him to Minnesota or the Bears in Chicago. What's up with that, A-Train?
Being the barbershop Ubuntu here, I'm going to have to... Y'all are a bunch of haters right now. I'm from Chicago, but I had to say Brett Favre is my favorite football player there has been in the last 20 years. I'm not saying I think he should come back. I'm saying that if he wants to come back, he's Brett Favre. I mean, that's...
Ruben, my question is, he coming back for the glory or is he coming back for the money?
I think he's coming back for the ego, if at all. And I think Favre is probably more in the right because the team can't make up its mind. They don't want to trade him or release him. But on the other hand, they don't want to necessarily play him first string. They want to have him in the back, right? So it's really inconsistent. It's like my girlfriend I used to know in college who had this philosophy. Mm-hmm. I may not want you. Listen carefully now. Listen carefully.
I may not want you,
but I don't want anybody else to have you either. So let him play somewhere else.
Put your hater aid down, guys.
Everybody, I think I'm going to have to retire for the day. I think that's a wrap. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being a part of the
Barbershop. Y'all a bunch of haters.
I got to kick it back to the lady of the house. The quarterback, Michelle Moy.
That's right. But I guarantee you, if you had $20 million for me, I would go home. Okay.
I'd find something else to do.
Like, peace, I'm out.
That's right. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist who writes for TheRoot.com at TV One Online. He joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete writes for the San Diego Union Tribune and CNN.com. He joined us from San Diego. Nick Charles is the Vice President of Digital Content for BET.com. He joined us from our bureau in New York. And Arsalan Iftikhar is a contributing editor for Islamica Magazine and a civil rights attorney. He joined us from our Washington bureau. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Peace.
We love you, Michelle. Hey. We love you.
Yep.